2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We're happy to be joined today by USA Baseball National Team General Manager Eric Campbell. Eric played an integral part in putting together the Team USA roster that will be going to Premier 12 and try to qualify for the Olympics for the United States as well. Eric, putting together a roster like this, what was kind of the overarching theme? Obviously, you were limited to non-40-man roster players, which added a wrinkle into the process, but how did it kind of come together, and what did you guys want to try and accomplish with this roster?
Well, we had to be realistic about who's gonna be able to pitch in November. So, you know, we needed to look worldwide, and in great credit to the clubs, 14 of our 15 pitchers are going to come from the teams in Major League Baseball. So if you would have asked me that this time last year, you know, I'm not sure that we would have had that. But with the shortening of the fall league, I think that aided us, that there's still pitchers that, you know, in the past would have pitched into November in the fall league. And this year they're not, because the fall league is going to end on October 26th. So I think we benefited from that change, and we're certainly excited that we do have what we think is a great pitching staff.
Yeah, with that pitching staff, one of the things that jumped out to me looking at the rosters was the diversity of arms. You have some power arms, guys like Spencer Howard and Tyler Johnson. You have some more pitchability guys like Parker Dunchy. You have Sidearmer and Wyatt Mills. And then you also have some veteran guys like a Clayton Richard. How much was that a focus of you guys trying to kind of be able to bring out different looks to your pitching staff? Like I said, some power guys, some pitchability guys, different arm slots. How much was that a conscious effort you guys made?
I think it becomes secondary. I think you go after, I think you look at performers, and you go out and you look at who's performed, and you try to study and say, okay, does this guy still potentially have innings left in his year? Is he going to go to winter ball? You know, is this just a way to, you know, an extension of what he normally does? Is he going to winter ball? Is he going to be ready? So when you look at it, you number one, you look at performers, and then when you get permission to talk to a player and you would get consensus with the committee that you're going to put him on a team, you start to look at the unique ability, you know. So if you go to a veteran like Richard, you know, obviously I think some of the terms used, you know, nothing's going to phase him in this event. You know, he's not going to see anything he hasn't seen before, but then you contrast that with someone like Tyler Johnson, who's been on the mound with us in Taiwan, in Japan, in Cuba, in our nation's uniform on the collegiate national team, and you also have great confidence that he's not going to be phased as well, because he's worn this uniform as well. So, you know, you could take it from one extreme to the other, but you still get to a point where, when you make an invite, that you really believe this person's gonna help us, and that's where we think we are.
You made reference to the innings and how many innings they had left. What was kind of the innings number you were looking at for guys to see? Okay, if they threw this many, we think this they have the innings they can give us.
Yeah, certainly you're throughout the process. You know, you're looking at transactions starting in April. You know, you're asking Brad Young and his team to give you transactions. And you know, is someone going to miss time because of a non-arm injury? You know, is someone going to miss time because of an oblique situation or whatever it may be? You know, an ankle, a knee, whatever it may be. And then all of a sudden, you know, is do you start forecasting innings available? So, you know, I could give you my philosophy, but that doesn't really make too much sense. It's more about what's understood. So maybe somewhere, if it's a younger prospect, maybe between that 130 and 140, you know, net innings for a year is probably somewhere where if we think we would be way above that with our 10 to 18 innings for any given pitcher, then that may be too much for someone who hasn't done that before. So that's so really, if we start looking at 130, 135, and we start adding 10 to 18 from what we're looking for, maybe we do project that we're not going to get permission to speak to the athlete. So
you mentioned this process starting in April and the process of speaking to the athletes. Take us through the process. You guys started identifying potential targets.
Yeah, I think it's important to say that with all of our programs at USA Baseball, since the Premier 12 in November of 2015 ended, there's been international points accumulated over this quad, you know, and to getting to this point. So kudos to all our programs at USA Baseball for making us the number two ranked team in the world behind Japan, and the fact that we're qualified for the Premier 12. And then you start to go out. We met with just about every club in the month of March in Arizona and in Florida, and met with their minor league staff and talked about the event. And then you get into the process of hiring staff. You know, you go out and you hire a great field staff, and as details of the tournament start coming to you, you start putting together a training camp and put everything on paper. And then you go out, and with the help of some great folks in the game of baseball and in the industry that help us, for the love of Team USA, love of our uniform, they help us identify the athletes that should be invited to this team. So, and that becomes really that ramped up closer to the All-Star break. And then really every week became hot and heavy from the big league All-Star break on, through October 3rd, when we had to submit our final roster. There was intense calls every week, and sometimes multiple calls during a week, to get to, as a group, to get to invites. And then once you have an invite out, you got to go to the player and explain everything to him. There may, you know, with players, their agents may have questions. They may come back with more questions, and eventually you get a yes or a no on the offer. So it's always an exciting process, and we're fortunate with the great pool of players we have in the USA. It's hard to make a lot of mistakes on, because we, you know, the team we have is going to be great, but there's other versions of the team that won't be on the field that would be equally as great. So, you know, there's lots of components.
So you mentioned you guys really start contacting teams. The players are identified. You have a committee of a dozen or so scouts that scour the nation and provide recommendations. You guys start contacting teams. Once the team gives you permission to invite the player could still potentially say yes or no?
Oh, yeah. The player may say, you know what, just this doesn't work, you know, for whatever reason. And if the club says no, we don't get into whatever the club tells us. Then that's there. You know, we don't try to explore that. It's either yes or no. We move on. If we get a yes, then we go to that player and we make a great pitch. And for whatever reason, he may say he can't do it, and we just, you know, we move on. We're not going to belabor that. He knows what he should be doing in November. And if this doesn't fit, then it doesn't fit. So
when in the process do you guys engage the players, and when are the teams engaged?
If our committee says, you know what, we should ask this player to play on the team, then we get permission from the club, and it's immediate. You know, so if the club says yes, the club may say yes, but let us talk to him first. Yeah, or the club may say, yes, here's his cell phone number, and we go. It's immediate. In most cases, when Paul Seiler reaches out to a player, you know, in most cases, Paul doesn't even get through the whole pitch. You know, most players are like, hey, you know what? Let's go. I'm going. And so, you know, that's always a pleasure too. You know, when it's usually pretty immediate. You know, but then again, every player has to evaluate it, and there may be things that that a player brings up to us, and he just can't, at this time in his life, he just can't accept that offer. So,
you guys finish up with a 28-man roster. How many players do you guys ask permission for to get to that final 28?
Oh, it'd be an estimate, but we probably view, I mean, shoot, we probably view stats. If there's 28, we probably view stats on 280 players. And in terms of a reach, you know, any given exercise throughout the years for our professional national teams, if there's 28, we may have had 40 outreaches, you know, on average on any given year.
With all the guys you reached out to, the final product of the national team was certainly a very, very talented group that really stood out for the high-level prospects as well as the veteran mix. The final total, 22 prospects, 6 veterans with major league time. How did you guys settle on that being the mix you guys wanted?
This thing has evolved since a lot of the pro coverage guys started jumping in 2006 when we started doing this. I just think as administrators, you know, we know we might only have an hour with the committee. If the conversation is pushed in a certain direction at a certain position, you know, we'll open it up and we'll try to pick apart why we should or should do this. But it becomes, at this point in 2019, it becomes pretty clear that we should ask on this player. And so that is just kind of a process where you start, you know, there's a lot of easy picks in that regards, and then it becomes hard, you know, it's easy to ask a player to play for his nation, but you know, there's times when it may get down to player X, Y, or Z, and you got to spend more time. And once you've already built part of the roster, you start seeing, you know, right left balance in the batter's box, you know, right left balance on the mound, and who can close, who can match up, who has a little bit of length on the mound. You start talking about what a player can bring to the team. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to not ask players sometimes that you've either known because they're alumni and they've been such great performers in the past, and you're not able to ask on this particular assignment. You know, you can't ask them this time, and that hurts. But you still, you know, you go to the process and you say who performed and what makes most sense for the team, and so they're. Hey, that's fun baseball conversations right there, you know. And then we may do all that work, and it's you know, the 1, 2, 3 guys that you discussed, maybe 3 of those guys are not available. So you start all over again at that particular point in the conversation.
In regards to the conversations, one of the most interesting things to me that jumped out was how many teams were willing to send their very, very top prospects to play for Team USA, particularly on the position player side. Joe Adell, Alec Bohm, Andrew Vaughn, Drew Waters. What's that conversation like with those teams about getting their top prospects to come play for Team USA?
I think, you know, hopefully there's a great comfort in our product. I hope. You know, we tell players and anybody in baseball in the USA that you know, we're the caretaker of what we think is one of the greatest baseball uniforms out there, and then you know, the players that get asked, they're USA baseball, it's their uniform, and so, you know, it just kind of happens. And I just hope there's, you know, I think and I hope that there's great trust with who we're going to put on the field, because they're USA baseball, but the field staff is more USA baseball than I am, perhaps. I've been helping USA baseball since 1994, but when a manager or a pitching coach are on the field, they're USA baseball. And so I feel proud about being the caretaker of a great uniform. And I think that because we've had such great people come through, and there's such buy-in to it, that I think there's comfort in letting a player play in his nation's uniform. And I think we're going to do things right at every turn.
So generally speaking, most of these teams, when you call and say, hey, we want Joe Adell, they're willing?
Yeah, I can only paraphrase, but I think that for the most part, the clubs want to find a way to say yes. You know, if they can't, they can't. We don't belabor that, because at the end of the day, we fielded a great team. And 27 of the 28 players are from 30 clubs. So that just tells you right there and then that they're trying to get the yes, you know, when this uniform comes around.
You mentioned the workload you look for with pitchers. How much does that come into play with position players at all? Some of these guys did miss time with injuries or only played half the season. How much does workload come into it when you're selecting position players?
Well, I think selfishly position players, we love it when they're going to the fall league, you know, because they're still playing. They're still playing great baseball every day. And if you go back to the 2015 team, you know, the example is Adam Frazier, where we had an injury. Adam Frazier came onto our roster very, very late, if you remember. And he'd been in the fall league. And then not only was he our MVP as a position player, he was the MVP of the P12 in 2015 as the most outstanding offensive player in the tournament. He was awarded that by the tournament. So that's one example, but we believe in it. We believe that there's no better place for a guy to be once we select him than in the fall league. But if they're not in the fall league, then there's also trust. You know, we trust our players to get ready. You know, whether they're a young player or a veteran player, there is a huge amount of trust that they understand that, you know, we've only got so many training days, and then we're going to play a meaningful game on November 2nd. So there's also a great amount of trust in the guys that we select, even if they're not in the fall league.
Yeah, it definitely did jump out how many of these guys were fall leaguers. Now, had you already made these selections before the fall league rosters were announced, but you had an idea who would be there?
In part, because just if you go back to the post-All-Star game, thought, you know, there's players that each week were coming onto our roster then, and maybe we didn't have that information. Maybe we only had an inkling that they may or may not go to the fall league, but we didn't necessarily make decisions because a guy was going to the fall league. That just kind of, you know, if they were going, we thought that was great. If they weren't going, then, you know, we had trust that they were going to get ready.
Absolutely. In terms of the roster itself, a couple of interesting things jumped out at me. The first one I wanted to ask you about was two players who have two-way backgrounds made the roster, Clayton Andrews with the Brewers organization and Jake Cronenworth in the Rays organization. Did that two-way versatility play a role in the decision to put them on the roster?
I think that was just – that's a bonus. For Clayton Andrews, I think that's a bonus that, you know, if we're able to use him as a pinch runner, you know, or as a – emergency outfielder, that's a bonus, but I don't think it was not a primary consideration. For Jake, he's going to play infield only for us, so that was not a factor whether or not he could pitch or not. He's not going to pitch in this event, so
okay.
And then, so he's going to play infield. Certainly, him being in Durham, it was exciting to see him do an opener every once in a while, you know, and then get to see Brendan McKay at times come in after him. That's exciting for the game of baseball from where I sit. You know, being a guy that was drafted as a pitcher catcher, that's exciting to see the game come back to that a little bit. But for us, that's, you know, it's a 28 man roster. We feel like with 13 position players and 15 pitchers, with three games in Mexico, with 7 days off before we would play in Japan, if we get there. And then really, you know, there's a couple more days off intermersed into the Japan part of the tournament. So we feel like we're covered with the 28 man roster.
In terms of the veterans, Clayton Richard and Eric Kratz, yeah, those are the two that really jumped out, I think, on paper. Yeah. How did you guys come to deciding these are the two guys we want to put on this roster as potential leaders of this team?
Well, Eric played on a team in 2010, and he was just an instant leader of that team. He was a performer on that team. And then, you know, he went on to, you know, in 11 through 18, you know, he went on and has had a great career. And if you go this just about this time last year, he was in the National League Championship Series and for the Brewers. So we really when we knew he was available, that was really an easy one for us. And we know how he takes care of his body. We know how he controls the game. We know how he works with pitchers. We really feel like we've got another coach on the field by name and Eric. With Clayton, certainly, you know, like I said, as I mentioned earlier, there's not going to be anything at this event that will surprise him, will shock him that he won't be ready for. So he's, you know, he's done a lot, and you know, and when he was in college and then as a professional baseball player, and you know, we're just fortunate to have him with that kind of experience. And we haven't opened camp yet, but we know he'll provide leadership as well to a pitching staff.
On the other end of the spectrum with the younger guys, one name that did jump out was Xavier Edwards in the Padres organization. For the most part, this Team USA is guys double A and above. There are a couple exceptions, but Edwards stood out just because high schooler, spent the year at the Class A levels. What did you guys see from him that said, we think he's going to be ready for this competition?
We wanted an element of team speed, but he's more than that. I mean, we start looking beyond just some base stealing metric, and you start getting reports on how well he plays as a defender, and you know, how mature he is as a hitter as well. So even though he's 20, the reports were all good, and so you get to a point where, you know, you're going to name another infielder, and you know, we're really fortunate that he was available and he's going to play.
Another really interesting selection was Noah Song, who was drafted this year out of Navy by the Red Sox in the fourth round. His background, just coming out of Navy, having a two-year military service requirement, how much did that have an impact on the decision to bring him onto Team USA?
Well, you know, we looked at a lot of the guys that are military guys that are in the minor leagues. So John Rossoff, who's a catcher with the Tigers, and Griffin Jacks, who's a pitcher from Air Force in the Twins organization, and Jake Gilbert, who signed with the Reds this year as a free agent pitcher from the Air Force Academy, and of course Noah, who was drafted in the fifth round with the Red Sox. We just, you know, we believe in his arm, you know, and his senior year with the ability to throw strikes and command all of his games. And just, we know Noah a little bit, and we just felt like, you know what, if he's available, this would be a great pick. Number one, for what he can do on the mound, because he's going to have one of the best power arms in the P12. But then again, the story behind it is just, you know, it's a bonus.
Were you guys trying to ensure you had at least one Service Academy player on the roster?
I don't think there was a goal. I think it was just, you know, it happened where there was a lot of excitement that if we could get him, we should get him, and it happened. It happened fast, and we're glad we got him. So I don't know that we were set out for a quota, but certainly these guys that are in a, for lack of better words, an elite athlete program from the service academies, if we do have a chance to name them, I think it does help. You know, even if we didn't select all these guys, at least having one guy in this program does help the other service academy players that do want to pursue a career in baseball. I think that you know, that this team, this professional national team, is available for Noah to continue to pursue his pitching while all these other situations get worked out, you know, between the Red Sox and the Navy and his pursuit to the big leagues.
You mentioned a couple times wearing the USA uniform. A lot of these players have prior experience, whether it's with the 18U team, the college national team. How much of an emphasis did you guys place on prior experience playing for Team USA?
Well, I still think it goes back to performance. You know, we talk, someone performs and then it becomes great background information where there may be scouts that don't realize that he's an alum of ours, and it's a nice layer for us to bring in and say, hey, you know, he's been to, you know, he's been to Taiwan, he's been to Japan, he's been to Cuba, he's been to Korea at an 18U World Championship, he's been to Japan, I mean, Canada at a World Championship, whatever it may be. It adds a little bit of weight that this person really, really understands what he's getting into if he accepts this call. And it's comforting. It's comforting to know that, you know, your alumni are, you know, from younger programs are still having a chance to play on additional teams. You know, that's, we talk about that at every age level. And, you know, we're glad there's a good amount of alumni on this team.
And then on the older side, we talked about Clayton Richard and Eric Kratz and kind of the leadership they provided. Going after guys who have big league experience but are not currently on 40-man rosters, yeah. Brooks Pounders, Caleb Thielbar, Brian Flynn, how do you guys pick out which of those guys with major league experience you want? What's that process like?
You know, it's just, it helps. It helps knowing that they've been there. You know, that's the pinnacle of the game, and the fact that they're now maybe available to play on a national team and represent their country, we think it can only help our team with their experience. So it's attractive to us as we sit and we see there's a transaction and player X may be available. Certainly we, you know, that's a big thing that we want to pursue. If we can get that player, we think it's a bonus to our team.
And some of these players, like Brian Flynn, like Brooks Pounders, didn't elect free agency until after the conclusion of the regular season. So even though you're starting these conversations with teams in July, it seems like this process continues to go really up through, you know, September 30th, October 1.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Because there's, you know, there's all kinds of things that happen in a selection process. So, you know, just like we're saying, we're watching transactions every day, and we're trying to see who's available. And then when this team wraps up, hopefully we're qualified for the Olympic Games, and we'll begin the same process immediately the next day for our next event.
You know, we talked about, just from a roster construction standpoint, looking at the pitching staff, having guys, you know, right-handers, left-handers, soft tossers, power arms, side armers, just all different kinds of looks. The position player side, I thought, was similarly interesting because you have some big right-handed power types in Alec Bohm and Bobby Dalbec and Andrew Vaughn. But you mentioned you also have some speedster types like Xavier Edwards, some middle infield types like CJ Chatham and Jake Cronenworth who get the bat to the ball. Was there an overarching philosophy in the position players you guys pursued, or were you trying to get a diversity of skill sets?
You know, if you look at Alec and Bobby and Andrew, you know, they're right-handed power hitters, but they're also good hitters too. You know, they have more ways to get RBIs than just hitting a home run, all three of them. So there's, you know, these are dangerous hitters. We do play in Mexico. We found out at the World Baseball Classic in 17 that the stadium, you know, the ball will fly there. And then if you go, you know, if you're lucky enough to advance to the Tokyo Dome and then a game or two in Chiba, you know, the ball will fly in those stadiums too. So you want to have balance on any team, but certainly, you know, you want to be able to change a game. You know, you want to be able to change a game with an at bat too.
You referenced earlier, 27 of the 28 players came from major league organizations. The one exception was Brandon Dixon, a former, yes, Cardinals pitcher. He now pitches for Oryx and NPB in Japan. How big was that for you guys to get someone who has pitched in Japan, considering if you advance out of the first round, you'll be playing in Japan?
I think it's important. You know, we looked hard at Mexico, at one point Casey Coleman was on the roster, who was in Tijuana and had played for us on two teams in 2015, and had saves and had good saves late. And unfortunately, he just had to come off the roster. And then we looked in Korea, and there's some great performers in Korea. And of course, we looked in Japan, and there's a lot of great American players in Japan. And certainly, Brandon is closing, and in Japan to close, when the game's on the line, and especially if you're on the road in Japan, and are you gonna make somebody swing the bat and miss? Are you gonna make somebody swing and make bad contact to get your save? You're probably not gonna sit there on the road in Japan and get strike one, strike two called, strike three called. So you're gonna make people swing the bat. You gotta have good enough stuff to do that in and out of the zone. So certainly for us to have a closer with his 2019 resume is important to us. And it's one player, but certainly we looked at many, many other players in those three leagues, including Taiwan as well. So really the four leagues. And then also had our eye on some guys in some independent leagues in the States too. So we just feel like we have a massive pool. And as we focus those selections, we think we're making good selections at any point.
You mentioned Casey Coleman having to come off the roster and a couple of these big leaguers only being able to put on the roster after the conclusion of the regular season. How much of this is an ever-shifting, ever-evolving roster? Like, when do you get your first player locked in, and when is the whole roster finally locked in?
Yeah, there was, like I said, right after the All-Star game, we started moving. So I couldn't tell you who Kratz was early in the process, but we thought he may be a call-up. We thought he may be a traded player, so to go to the big league. So we invited him, but we also kept our fingers crossed for our team, but also in our hearts, knowing that if he did get called up, that's what he ultimately wants, to get back to the big leagues, and we'd be happy for him, and we'd go to the next catcher on the list. So there's all kinds of things that could happen. There was other players that we didn't publicize that were on the roster that were called up. So, we think we're doing our job. A lot of times we do joke around that we know we're on the right guy because we'll invite him, and the next day or two he gets called up to the big leagues. So we think our committees are doing a great job, because that happens quite often.
With that, a lot of these players, the hope, of course, is that this team goes out and shows well at Premier 12 and ultimately qualifies for the 2020 Olympics. Obviously, you'd like to keep a relatively similar roster that you used to qualify for when the Olympics would actually come around. But when you have a lot of these guys who are in AA and AAA and are top prospects, there's a very real chance they'll be called up by the time the Olympics roll around next July and August.
It is. And we don't know. We don't yet know if the Olympics, 2008, the criteria to go to the Olympics was a non-25 man roster player. We don't know what the criteria will be between the World Baseball Softball Confederation and Major League Baseball. We don't know what the criteria will be. But certainly, Brad Young puts out a release all the time. When our alumni go to the big leagues, that's a great day at USA Baseball, because the guys have played for their national team, and they're getting to the pinnacle of their profession, and that's where they want to be. So we're excited for them. So, roster processing is always ongoing. I don't care. I don't care where it is. It's always an ongoing process. And we're fortunate that our pool is so great in the United States.
With that, I thought it was interesting you mentioned that the rules for selection could change. It was non-40-man players right now, and I think the assumption is it will be the same for the Olympics, but that is not set in stone yet?
Not that I've seen. Yeah, it may be that it's non-40, but we haven't seen that yet. That's really getting the cart ahead of the horse. We need to go to the P12 and be the best team from the Americas. That's the job in front of us. And when that happens, if we wake up on November 18th and we're qualified, then we'll begin the process of start looking at how we're going to field a gold medal Olympic team. So, but until then, we really can't put a lot of stock in that until until we take care of the qualification process.
Absolutely, one step at a time. Well, we look forward to seeing how it shakes out. Training camp opens next week, and then the U.S. begins their attempt to qualify for the Olympics November 2nd in Mexico, and we look forward to seeing what this very talented team can do on the international stage. Eric Campbell, General Manager of USA Baseball, thank you so, so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and best of luck in the coming weeks.
All right, thanks, Kyle.
Once again, that was Eric Campbell, General Manager of the Team USA National Baseball Team, that will be going to Mexico to try and qualify for the Olympics in the Premier 12 tournament. If Team USA succeeds there, they'll move on to Japan for the second round and potentially the championship round as well. We'll be watching their progress closely. I will be out in Arizona next week at the training camp reporting day-to-day everything that's happening with the team. We've already had one major move. Joe Girardi, who was announced as the manager for Team USA, has stepped down to pursue Major League Baseball managerial opportunities. Scott Brosius will now take over as manager for Team USA. So a lot of developments ahead, a lot more still to come. And keep it here at Baseball America for all the latest coming from Team USA. Once again, we'd like to thank Eric Campbell for joining us on this edition of the Baseball America podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Eric Campbell, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thank you for listening, everybody.